Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. In its 2013 Action for Healthy Communities survey, 14% of the respondents reported either they or someone in their household had a permanent physical or mental disability that substantially limited a major life activity. Although many would consider access for people with disabilities as a civil right, removing barriers for people living with disabilities is also a social concern and one that's a growing issue as our population ages. There are a number of professionals and organizations located on the Central Coast that are dedicated to removing barriers and increasing opportunities for people with disabilities, and my guests today represent just a few of them. With me today on air is Dr. Kevin Taylor, Department Chair of Kinesiology Department at Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, and the creator and director of Activity for All, or A4A, a Cal Poly Stride program. Mark Schaefer, who's the executive director of United Cerebral Palsy of San Luis Obispo County, and John Lee, assistive technology specialist at Cal Poly and the Central Coast Assistive Technology Center and member of the local disability advocacy group Access for All. Our discussion topic today is going to start with access as a civil right. And as a reminder, Central Coast Voices is always a participatory show, and you are the part of the discussion, a big part. You can bring your voice to our conversation by calling us at 781-3875 with your questions and comments. And I want to welcome Dr. Kevin Taylor, Mark Schaefer, and John Lee.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Really appreciate all of you being here. And, you know, when we talk about access as a civil right, and why don't we start with kind of what that means to each of you individually? And I'll start with you, Dr. Taylor.
Certainly, yes. Thank you for having me on.
Yes.
And it's a good question. The dominant perspective on disability in society and the way that society as a whole views people with disabilities is still very much categorical. We tend to look at people with disabilities and label them. We label them as people who have an illness. We label them as people who are less than. And there's very much a stigma still attached to disability. And what I try to get across with the class that I've been teaching at Cal Poly and the programs that I run at Cal Poly is very much more a social minority perspective. So if we look at people with disabilities as part of a social minority, just like any other social minority, and I think everyone can think of a social minority group. And so if you go with me right now and think of a social minority group, you can think of words that would be highly offensive to people in that social minority group and words that we wouldn't use, language that we wouldn't use because we know it to be offensive. There's language that's offensive to people with disabilities. There are terms, labels, words that are offensive to people with disabilities. There are lots of other parallels that we could draw with other social minority groups. So if we look at people with disabilities as having a unique characteristic, and we look at their disability as a characteristic rather than something that is less than, something that's been taken away, then we start to see people with disabilities in a whole different light. Mm. And we can see them very much more as part of the rich fabric of a diverse society. And people with disabilities represent a profound resource to society. And if we don't include them, if we don't empower them to be a part of society, then we're pushing away a potentially valuable resource that they have a great deal to offer. And we need to structure society, social programs, physical spaces in ways that are inclusive. And so looking at people with disabilities from a social minority perspective is very much more empowering. And is very much more something that I want to promote through classes, through research writings, and through the programs that I run in the community.
So. That's great.
Definitely, John. Yeah. Kevin said it well. I think as a person with a physical disability myself, I can identify with that idea of being part of a minority. And it's important to recognize that disability is the largest and most diverse minority. There's people with all different types of disabilities that can fall within that group. But first and foremost, people with disabilities are people. Mm-hmm. And it's important that we realize that having a disability is a normal part of the human experience. And at any time, anybody can be touched by that, either personally through family or friends, and become part of that minority. So the civil rights for people with disabilities are the civil rights for all of us. And we need to keep that in mind, that it's not a us and them type of thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We're all part of that continuum. But when you're experiencing disability, you can encounter barriers that limit your ability to enjoy the things that all of us as Americans can enjoy. And so that's why we need to look at access as a civil right, because especially for people with disabilities, not just a group of regulations that need to be complied with, which is often how some of the legislation is looked at. But when you have a disability, you are going to encounter some challenges that have nothing to do with your disability. And that's what we need to try to eliminate, so that we can allow people with disabilities to, as Kevin said, participate just like other members of society.
And the legislation is there to help provide those and protect those
exactly.
civil rights. And
yep.
we've done that with other minority groups. We do that in other contexts. It's not unique to,
exactly.
To the world of people with disabilities, the community
yep.
of people with disabilities.
Definitely.
Yeah. And Mark?
Well, my background over the last 30 years, I've worked with kids and adults with developmental disabilities, so individuals born with disabilities or they incurred before the age of 18. And over that period, I've seen a tremendous transition from parents being very protective and not allowing their sons and daughters. And matter of fact, I would say 40 years ago, when someone was born with a developmental disability, they were put into a state hospital.
Yes.
And their parents were told, you know, go try to have another baby and just forget about your son
mm-hmm.
or daughter.
Mm-hmm. Leave that to the state to care for, yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the people I've worked with have come from the movement where we realize everybody needs to be a part of our society
mm-hmm.
and they need to be able to participate and have value. And so now we have almost all the people with developmental disabilities out of the state hospitals. And then I've seen people that lived in very protective environments that now have their own apartments and have jobs out in the community. But what I realize is that we were the barrier. We were trying to be protective. Oh, we couldn't have these individuals go out in the community. Some of you might take advantage of them.
Right.
So we and our attitudes, although we meant well, were actually becoming the barriers. And so that's part of the whole civil rights movement, is many people have the vision, oh, people with disabilities, we need to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're somebody who just needs care. And that's not the case. They're individuals that really want to be a part of society, want to be independent. Every day they get up and getting ready to go out is a major challenge. And, you know, to me, they're heroes. They're going out there and they just want to be part of our society. So part of what, besides the law, is just getting all of us to be aware that they are individuals and include them and you know, treat them as individuals, just like anybody else.
Well, and I think what you're talking about is a sense of pride for that individual, too. You know, there's an allowing that pride to be established in that individual and allowing them to feel that, rather than coming across from an approach of pity or
mm-hmm. right.
or being condescending about what other people can and can't do, because we can't see it.
Definitely.
From our perspective.
Having pride in themselves, acknowledging that they're a part of this minority group, is something that we do to empower all minorities.
Right.
Other minority groups mark their culture, their history. They celebrate that. They don't shy away from it. They don't
mm-hmm.
hide it. They're proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people with disabilities now are adopting that same perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And they see their disability very much as part of who they are and what defines them. And it's sometimes troubling for people without disabilities to hear someone with a disability say, oh, I wouldn't change it. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't, if I could wave a magic wand and make my disability go away, mm-hmm. I wouldn't do it because mm-hmm. it's part of who they are. They can't imagine that. It defines them. Mm-hmm. They can't imagine their life without it. Mm-hmm. And that's a very different perspective from the dominant perspective. And it's one that's hard for some people without disability to really to take on board and appreciate. And you use the word pity, and that's one that gets used a lot in this area and in the literature, because that is part of this categorical dominant social perspective towards people with disabilities. It is changing, and Mark pointed to some events in history that the older listeners will probably remember that it was very much in the news. It was front and center, and we've come a long way mm-hmm. From those institutions. We've come a very long way, but there's a lot of work still to be done because
Absolutely.
That the vestiges of that perspective, where we pity people with disabilities, is still around, and we need to move from a perspective of pity
right.
to one of empowerment,
right.
one of inclusion, and people with disabilities need help every now and again, and sometimes they need more help than others, but hey, there's people without disabilities that need a lot of help too. We all need a little help, you know.
Well, and I think there's an issue, you know, and as you gentlemen were talking too, I mean, when I look at the differences, I have an aunt who was born and had severe epilepsy, mm-hmm. and she was institutionalized when she was 5 and has been in an institution since then. She's now in her 80s. And has never, since she was 5, lived outside an institution except for visits with a family. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, has a socialization of a child of 5. I have a grandson who was born with spina bifida and was determined to have spina bifida when he was 4 months in utero. Mm-hmm. And a daughter who determined at that point that she was going to have the child and do whatever was necessary to make it okay. And he's a miraculous young man who lives with his wheelchair and is incredibly enabled with mm-hmm. his wheelchair and does extreme sports and does, you know, and yeah. he's amazing to me.
And
but
that,
the diversity, I mean, the difference between those two mm-hmm, is mm-hmm. phenomenal.
And that's the thing. I think you touched on another thing, which is the shame that sometimes family
Absolutely.
And others feel, a community even, about yes. people with disabilities. And that's still goes on here and to a greater extent in other parts of the world where the lives of people with disabilities are devalued to the extent that they're abandoned, that people die. Fortunately, that's not happening, you know, to that degree here. But
As much. Yeah.
But that's a reminder of, you know, we're not in the clear with that. And the pity thing, you know, there's extremes with it. It's kind of like there's the pity idea, and then there's the inspirational person, mm-hmm. This superhuman kind of thing. And it really should just be more, you know, people with disabilities are people. We're just like anybody else, just trying to live our lives and have families and go to work and school and everything else. You know, what we do is not extraordinary. We're just, it may appear that way, but we're trying to adapt to our world and our situation just like anybody else does. We're just, you know, doing mm-hmm. it a different way. And so I think when we kind of get a more realistic attitude towards people with disabilities, you know, it makes it easier for everybody, because I don't want to be seen as, you know, put up on a pedestal, but I don't also want to be pitied.
Right.
It's somewhere in the middle, just like, you know, anybody else. And,
yeah.
And so that's kind of where, yeah, we're going with that.
I appreciate
if,
that.
If yeah. we sensationalize accomplishments
yeah.
And make a bigger deal of those accomplishments than they really are, then in many respects it can be a little demeaning.
Yeah,
it's almost condescending to overdo
right.
it.
And that's part
yeah.
of the pity.
Part of the pity thing.
Mentality.
Right. It's backward pity.
And yeah, it's backward pity.
Yeah,
there you go.
People with disabilities, what we're promoting is that people with disabilities may need help. They don't need pity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Have compassion. Not pity. We mm-hmm. should have compassion for all
yeah.
human beings.
But, absolutely.
And it's a basic civil right. That's sort of where mm-hmm. we're coming from.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. You are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio 90.1 San Luis Obispo, 89.5 Santa Barbara, and worldwide on the web at kcbx.org, part of the NPR Digital Network. I'm talking with Dr. Kevin Taylor, Department Chair of the Kinesiology Department at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, and the creator and director of Activity for All, and a Cal Poly Stride program. Mark Schaefer, Executive Director of United Cerebral Palsy San Luis Obispo, and John Lee, Assistive Technology Specialist at Cal Poly and the Central Coast Assistive Technology Center. Boy, that's a mouthful. And member of the local disability advocacy group Access for All. Today's discussion topic is access as a civil right. And Central Coast Voices is a participatory show, so I'm inviting you, if you've got some perspective on today's topic, a question or comment for the guests today, you can add your voice to our conversation by calling us at 781-3875. Again, that's 781-3875. And John, something that you mentioned when you were doing your intro is that, you know, the idea that disabilities or loss of any kind of function mm-hmm. is something that we're only born with, or it happens to us and mm-hmm. then we live with it, is not true. I mean, mm-hmm. it can happen in a moment. It can mm-hmm. be an accident. It can be a health issue. It can be aging. Mm-hmm. It can be any number of things. And so the idea that it's them mm-hmm. that we're having to tolerate these rules and regulations for mm-hmm. or make situations for, it's really not
yeah.
not the perspective that we need to be taking.
You're exactly right. It often takes a personal experience, even if it's a temporary disability or a family member.
Talk a little bit more about yeah. about that line of thinking, a yeah. temporary. Can you give an example?
You know, simple things like breaking your leg, experiencing something like Guillain-Barré syndrome, which sometimes people will get and they experience quite a bit of disability, and
right.
then
like a stroke,
return to normal,
almost like
a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, these kinds of things can happen, like you said, in a blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
Disability doesn't discriminate, and that's an important thing to know. And it's, if you live long enough, you know, with age, there's age-related disability.
You're going to have some debility.
Something's going to happen, and with our life expectancies and continuing to increase, we're going to continue to see that. You know, we talk about the baby boomer generation, you know, as you age, vision and hearing changes are very common in addition to mobility. And, you know, that's an important thing to keep in mind. And while you may not identify as a member of that social minority, the access that is provided is something you can benefit from. So what we start to see is that when we design our world, when we make access for everybody, especially for people with disabilities, a lot more people can benefit. And I won't go too much into that, but that's the concept of universal design or inclusive design. When we design our technology, our iPads, our iPhones, when we design our buildings, our you know, our businesses, our teaching style to accommodate the needs of people who are blind or visually impaired or hearing or mobility impaired, we start to see that a lot of other people benefit, whether they identify as disabled or not. A common example is like curb cuts. Those
yeah.
were designed originally for people who use wheelchairs, but any given day you can go downtown and see all the other different people that are using them. So if we focus too much on doing things just for people with disabilities, we lose sight of the fact that a lot more people can benefit. And again, that goes back to the idea of, you know, we're all people, we're all, these changes can come about in the blink of an eye. So rather than fight that or complain about that, think of it as, you know, this might be something I'm going to end up using today, tomorrow, whenever. So
some of the more nuanced examples as well go to the trend that John referred to. Mm-hmm. We have an aging population. More and more people are living longer, and car doors are designed to open wider now to make mm-hmm. it easier for elderly people to, with a little mobility impairment,
mm-hmm.
to get into the car. That was a design improvement that benefits everybody, because I use that little feature from time to time, cram a few little extra things in my car. It's a great design feature.
Yeah.
But it came from this perspective of, oh, these doors don't open wide enough for everybody. Well, that's easy. We'll just design it so it opens a little more widely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Good point. Mark.
Another feature we're working on at United Cerebral Palsy, a big change is when parents realize that their newborn has a disability, they used to go through a period, you know, where they'd be very sad and there'd be a lot of loss, and they still experience that. But then they quickly learn that just like their child without a disability, they have a lot of opportunities. So their life is going to be very similar, if not identical, to a child that does not have a disability. They can still play sports. They can still go to school. They can still make friends. And so a big thing that we do is help parents that have just found out and are grieving that, you know, this child is still going to be great and they're going to bring so much love into your life, and have them realize, you know, this child's not going to live with you. They're going to go to school. They'll live in their own house someday, and realize that with your positive support of this child, they're going to be an amazing adult.
Right. It'll just be different.
Mm-hmm.
You know? We get so narrowly regimented to think that the world only exists in the way that we're capable of living it, you know, but not that it can be lived in a multitude of different ways, and physical ability can be very different and it can still be very enriching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're very, very narrow, and we've got a couple of calls. So I'm going to take Lucille. Are you there?
Yes.
Hi, did you have a question or comment?
Oh, I hear you talking about disabilities, but I don't hear mental illness discussed at all, which is a disability, which is very traumatic and to the person and to the family. And if they got appropriate care, which I don't see happening in this county, they would be able to participate more in normal ongoings of in society and be included more.
You make a good point.
Yes.
You've got head nods from three gentlemen here, Lucille.
I think this is a good example of a disability that is commonly misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
And because we don't tend to mainstream and include people with cognitive disabilities, mental disabilities in the mainstream, people don't experience living alongside people with these kinds of disabilities, so they don't understand them. They feel a little threatened by them, and all of a sudden we perpetuate then the social barriers that lead to exclusion. And really inclusively, although we hadn't expressly mentioned cognitive disabilities, mental disabilities, they're an important consideration. They're absolutely part of what we're talking about. It's about creating environments, social and physical, that are inclusive of all people. And when we were talking earlier about excluding people from society, taking them out and isolating them, we did that a lot in special education. And mm-hmm. the thinking was that we would isolate people for their benefit. Well, we're including them for their benefit. Well, no, I want my child who doesn't have a disability to go to school alongside kids that do have disabilities, mm-hmm. so that he can understand what it is to live alongside people with disabilities. He can appreciate them.
Right.
He's exposed to the fact that people have different abilities, different physical abilities, different cognitive abilities. I want my children to grow up with a sense of the full richness of diversity and pluralism in society, and we should mainstream people, include people, not for their personal, but for mm-hmm. everybody's benefit.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Kevin brings up a great point. I think just as far as the exposure to that, I think a lot of times the more we interact with people, that fear, that ignorance tends to subside. And that's where we can, as we get past that, attitudes start to change when we have regular exposure and say, hey, this person's a lot like me. They just do things differently, or they have some different challenges. And to go to Lucille's point about mental disabilities, I couldn't agree more. I think especially if you're talking about mental disabilities in the sense of the psychiatric or mental illness, as sometimes called, those fall into that hidden disability that all too often just gets overlooked because it's not as easily visible or people are uncomfortable with it. But, you know, when we're talking about disability, we're trying to include everybody, and we all need to work together on you know, improving inclusion access, and realize that, you know, a lot of times it's not just one disability that a person has. It could be multiple. So all the more reason to take all those angles into consideration.
And I think with mental illness, you know, as the budgets got very tight, we severely cut the amount of support money for mental illness. And the whole problem is without support, you're going to spend so much more money down the line when that individual is incarcerated in prison or they need care all the time. And what we found with people with disabilities is it's, as far as the state's cost of supporting somebody out in the community, it has dropped so much because the individuals have jobs now, they're living in apartments. The state hospital system was extremely expensive. And I think mental health is the same way. We need to find money to reinvest and support people before their lives are completely ruined because their mental illness has just taken over.
Right. Definitely.
But thank you for bringing that up, Lucille.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. And Ruth, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I kind of have a question and a comment.
Sure.
I'm the mother of a young man who is age 40 and is a delightful soul, but he is also a person diagnosed with autism. And we're very fortunate when we lived in L.A. County to have had incredible services there. So my question to you three gentlemen is how do you rate San Luis Obispo County in terms of strengths and weaknesses for accessibility to quality services?
Good question.
Good question. I think San Luis County is doing well. I think they could be doing better, obviously, across the board. I mean, I'm speaking generally, but we do have a lot of good services, and some of them are represented here with United Cerebral Palsy and with what Kevin Taylor does with the Adapted Physical Activity. I'm with Central Coast Assistive Technology Center. You know, there's a lot of organizations that are trying to provide services. We probably can improve the communication to facilitate that, but I think we're doing a good job in providing opportunities for people with disabilities in this county, whether it's through education, recreation, employment. As far as, you know, physical accessibility, you know, when I compare it to where I travel elsewhere, you know, we're certainly doing a lot better, but could we improve? Certainly. And I think the good thing is that we've got some groups, like one of the groups I'm part of, Access for All, that is actively advocating for removing barriers in our county and, you know, working with other agencies to advocate for those improvements and to get the awareness out there of what still needs to be done. We, for example, acknowledge efforts done in our county by individuals, businesses, and organizations that work and go above and beyond to facilitate accessibility in our county. That's the Paul Wolf Accessibility Advocacy Awards that's done each year.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the kind of thing where we hope by recognizing those organizations, it's going to encourage more people to be part of that process and to continue to work for a more inclusive and accessible San Luis County. Just as one example, I mean, we have a beach in Avila Beach that is the one of only public beaches in California that has a motorized beach wheelchair to facilitate beach access. For a county that prides itself on, you know, its beaches and its outdoor activities, you know, that's one area where I think we're really doing a good job in trying to make that possible. So I'll let Kevin and Mark talk about that as well.
Yeah, I think in larger metropolitan areas where you have a higher density of people, then you have a higher density of people with different abilities, different disabilities, different conditions. And so there are certainly cities and communities around North America that have much more to offer in terms of programming because they have more people. I think for a community of our size, we're doing better than many communities. In probably there's undoubtedly there'll be some out there that are doing a better job for us. It really takes a community. Everyone has to pull together. Everyone has to become more aware. Everyone has to be supportive. This is a pretty strong community. People care about the community. That's why we're the happiest place to live, right? And so I think out of that comes for people in San Luis County generally do care about other people on the Central Coast. Mm-hmm. And so I think there is the support network that John's talking about. I still think there's a lot of ignorance in terms of just people not being aware of, mm-hmm. particularly like the last caller, with the mental illness and mm-hmm. those disabilities, the mental disabilities, mm-hmm. cognitive disabilities, the hidden disabilities mm-hmm. that people don't understand. As people become more aware, then I think in strong communities like ours, they'll be more supportive. There aren't the programs that there are in L.A., or Fresno, because those cities are bigger. They've got more people. Mm-hmm. And with that volume of people, you can really tailor programs to meet all of those needs. Mm-hmm. With a very much smaller client base, it's harder to develop those programs. Mm-hmm. But
to get the funding for them.
Yeah, and as awareness increases of those hidden disabilities, of all disabilities, I think it'll improve. There was the U.S. soccer team, standout performance by the goalkeeper and the goalkeeper of the U.S. soccer team, and people are only just now starting to realize that he has Tourette's syndrome. It's a hidden disability. Mm-hmm. People weren't aware of it. And I bet that there's a heck of a lot of people in the States that after that incredible standout performance, mm-hmm. Looked him up and then learned a heck of a lot about Tourette's syndrome.
Yeah.
So people are going to now see people with Tourette's syndrome
a little differently.
Good goalkeepers, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And, maybe Tourette's didn't make him a great goalie, but,
it didn't hurt.
Yeah.
It didn't hurt.
Yeah.
And this is Mark with United Cerebral Palsy. Our name's a little deceptive because we serve all children and adults with developmental disabilities. And Ride on Transportation is part of United Cerebral Palsy. So we have all kinds of programs, evening and weekend transportation, specifically for individuals like your son that want to go out into the community. We even have vacations that we're taking a group of 15 people to New York City next month. We have vacations that go all over. We have Saturday trips. So I really encourage you to call our office at 543-2039 or go to our website, which is ucp-slo.org. But I think we have quite a few services that can help get your son out in the community and be more included in his community.
And Mark's organization does a great job of promoting other community groups. The community does care. Mm-hmm. John's mentioned a couple of organizations, and I'm on the board of the North County Sports and Recreation Program, the Bulldogs. go Bulldogs in Atascadero. And they utilize UCP and Ride on Transportation. They get clients to and from the Bulldogs practices and their events, and they do weekend events, and there are enrichment programs that like the Bulldogs that UCP promotes on its website. And
I'm quite familiar with them. My son is one of the athletes, and that's just a grassroots started by parents, because as you say, it is a community that cares and is very concerned about accessibility.
And then Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center, which you probably know about, and Arts for Living, which is affiliated with UCP. So, there's a lot of good ones, and they're trying to communicate and link everybody up, hopefully, so no one falls through the cracks.
Well, I think we're fortunate to be here.
Yes, definitely, absolutely. And thank you for calling, Ruth.
Thank
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio, streaming live on the web at kcbx.org. With me on air today are Dr. Kevin Taylor, Department Chair of the Kinesiology Department at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, and creator and director of Activity for All, a Cal Poly Stride program, Mark Schaefer, Executive Director of United Cerebral Palsy San Luis Obispo, and John Lee, Assistive Technology Specialist at Cal Poly and Central Coast Assistive Technology Center, and a member of the local disability advocacy group Access for All. We've been talking about the importance of Access for All and the movement for change for people with disabilities or limited abilities. And if you're just now joining us and want to hear this show in its entirety, you can go to kcbx.org and use the drop-down menus under local programming. Our local shows on KCBX are archived for your listening convenience. It's just one of many features on our updated and new website, and I really encourage you to check it out. You guys have started talking about just the plethora of organizations you have, and Mark, you've been talking about what the United Cerebral Palsy is, and it's so much more than an organization just for cerebral palsy. Can you begin to talk a little bit about your organizations? Because I think it's important for that to come out.
Well, United Cerebral Palsy is a nationwide organization, and actually we now have affiliates in Canada, and we're linked up with Australia. And it's really, our mission is very simple. Our tagline is Life Without Limits. We feel people with disabilities, kids and adults, are just like every other people. And so there should be no limits to the opportunities that are offered to them. Now, they may not choose those opportunities, but they should have the opportunity to do different things.
To make those choices.
Right. I mean, just like we all have that.
Right.
And so what our organization does besides providing services is also look for some of those areas where somebody's not having an opportunity and see how can we make a difference for that person. It might be getting them an iPad so they can communicate because they're unable to communicate. We want people also to dream on their own of how they can make their life better.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's any way we can help them reach that dream or that goal, we want to hear about that, empower them, give them the tools to do it themselves. And because we have 128 vans and buses, kind of our history is let's get people out into the community. As we talked about, it's great for our community to be interacting with people with disabilities and realizing, wow, they're great people.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're no different, and then people get to know them. And I've got to say San Luis Obispo is really good about that from what I've seen. And so we use that access, and the individuals can call us and make their own rides, which when we started this 25 years ago, these are people that lived in a very protected home with like five other people, and they were calling us and making their own rides, and then we'd be telling their care providers, hey, we're coming Friday at 7 o'clock to pick Bobby up and take him to the movies. And so it's really empowering to let people do that. The other big thing is self-advocacy in general. Rather than UCP working to change people's lives, more and more people with disabilities are empowering themselves to get change within the system to make things different. And then on the family side, it's just kids need to grow up in a family. And so we do respite care. We do teen outings on the weekends. Again, we want to get the kids out there, get all kinds of experiences going.
And you also serve adults.
Yeah. So, but a big thing is supporting families.
Yeah.
It is, demanding to often to raise a child with a disability, but also support them emotionally because they are so strong, and they encourage their child to get them out there and experience as much as they can, like all of us did. I mean, my parents didn't know where I was, and I learned a lot just by going out there. And
you learn
things
away from your parents. You learn with a social structure of other people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's terrific. And you're listening to Central Coast Voices, and that was the voice of Mark Schaefer with United Cerebral Palsy Network. Our phone number is 781-3875, and I'm going to switch real quick because we have a phone call from Bill here. Bill, did you have a comment or question?
Yeah, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Okay, yes, this is Bill. I live in Aurora Grande. I'm a charter member of Sloco Access. We've been around for about 25 years, and we meet the third Wednesday of every month at the Graduate in San Luis. And we started out as an advocacy group to make things more accessible to people in wheelchairs.
Uh-huh.
And we pretty much accomplished that goal, and now we've kind of devolved into a social group that meets for dinner, and we hang out with other people in wheelchairs, mostly spinal cord injured people and people with MS, but anybody's welcome. And I think it's especially valuable for people who have been recently injured who want to learn the ropes about how to deal with it.
That's really great. And if people wanted to get in touch with somebody, how would they do that, Bill?
Well, they should probably just show up at the Graduate about 5 o'clock on the third Wednesday of every month.
Okay.
And get to know the people. We don't really have any leadership. And,
all right.
You know, we just get together and talk about our mutual problems and hang out with other people in wheelchairs.
Okay. So the third what day?
Wednesday.
The third Wednesday of the mm-hmm. month at the Graduate.
At
5 o'clock. Thank you for sharing that.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right. Bye.
Good group of people.
Good group of people.
Sloco Access, when I first came to San Luis 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
They did have leadership, mm-hmm. and they did, Bill's absolutely right, they accomplished a lot in terms of raising awareness. And I think that goes to the points that we've made earlier. If we continue to raise awareness in a community that cares and we go out of our way to care,
mm-hmm.
then positive change will occur.
Yeah.
And it really did. I think as John mentioned, the invisible disabilities and hearkening back to the first caller, we still got a long way to go on mm-hmm. some disabilities. On others that are more visible, more apparent, then I think perhaps we've made great progress in some areas, but we still have a long way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're coming up on the 25th anniversary of the passing of the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, in 1990. And when you get that perspective and you look around, you see things that still need to be done. It's sometimes a little bit difficult to swallow, to say, wow, it's 25 years, but we have made a lot of progress. And but there's definitely still work to be done. And hopefully if there's a little time before the end, I'll talk about one area, specifically healthcare accessibility, that I'm involved with Access for All, that I think really needs a lot of attention in our county as well as around the country. So
okay, and we'll definitely make time for that.
I think the Americans with Disability Act, they're, I'm afraid many Americans felt like by passing that, mm-hmm. we now have taken care of people with disabilities and everything's okay.
Right.
And what that really focused on was a lot of physical barriers and getting our transportation more accessible. But really, the toughest egg is the changing people's attitudes mm-hmm. and the way they interact with people with disabilities.
Yes.
And that's something that is going to take time. And mm-hmm. And we see that with all our minority groups. That's the last mm-hmm. frontier that's always the toughest to mm-hmm.
Well, and I do also, I want to speak also to the perspective, I think that comes both ways, too. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a need for both sides to find ways to access one another and to have mm-hmm. communication with one another, because there's sometimes two camps
mm-hmm.
and it's also can be this hostile
yeah.
kind of interaction. And I think it comes from a place of really not having an understanding or not mm-hmm. not finding a place of cooperation mm-hmm. and looking for differences rather than looking That's for ways of coming together for similarities.
That's a good point, yeah. Chris. And I think that's where with Access for All, we bring together members like Mark and Kevin here, people with and without disabilities, to right. work together on this cause. And so we have communication between professionals and non-professionals in the area, again, people with and without disabilities, looking at how can we all work together to improve access and inclusion for people with disabilities. And along the way, a big part of that is raising awareness and helping deal with some of the attitudinal barriers that are there. And like you mentioned, communication barriers are a huge one. And once we break through those things, I think, you know, we start to see improvement. But yeah. like Mark said, it's not happening overnight.
Right.
And we just need to keep pushing and getting that dialogue out there.
Yeah.
And shows like this will really help with that.
Yeah. And I think the communication piece for me is, you know, you don't understand. Well, you're right. Mm-hmm. I don't. Teach me.
Right.
You mm-hmm. know, help me understand.
Exactly.
Help me learn.
And our national organization at United Cerebral Palsy is doing this whole language study similar to with seniors, you know,
yeah.
the retired, mm-hmm. What's the group, the retired?
AARP.
AARP. Yeah. Well, they're using the word retired. Well, nobody wants to be considered retired.
Yeah. Right.
You know? And if you look at their commercials, they've dropped all that.
Oh, it's yeah,
all,
yeah.
And so we're looking at that. And really what it's all about is people with disabilities. There's no difference between all of us. We're all challenged.
Yeah.
We all need support at some time. You know, we have crises in our lives. And
yeah.
And so it's really not a we, they. It's kind of we're all in this together, and people with disabilities might need a little bit more support, maybe not. And so getting away from kind of this we, they,
yeah, yeah.
people with disabilities, mm-hmm. people that aren't,
yeah.
and just realize, you know, we're all part of the other thing is just so many people have some person with a disability in their lives.
Absolutely.
A family member, or they could work with people with disabilities. And so really it is this
continuum.
Yeah.
Almost like, yeah.
It's kind of we're all in this together. And
and we all have a disability.
Yeah.
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 Well,
oh, yeah.
You know, and this is probably, I mean, given the scope of what we're talking about, this is really stupid, but I'm left-handed. I grew mm-hmm. up and was left-handed. It was a deficit for me in school. All mm-hmm. of the desks were right-handed desks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of the spiral notebooks and all the binders are mm-hmm. made for right-handed people.
Mm-hmm.
And it never occurred to me until I figured, you know, I realized I was uncomfortable. Why was mm-hmm. that? It's stupid.
Right.
But then I realized, you know, this is no different than somebody else right. having something mm-hmm. that they're challenged with.
No, yeah. exactly.
It was like, okay, this is an everyday occurrence for me, but I wasn't able until a little bit later on to put it together.
Yeah.
Aha, the light went on.
Yeah, it's the interaction of the physical and the attitudinal side of it. We've been talking about physical barriers and attitudinal barriers,
mm-hmm.
but they interact. For many years, teaching the class that I taught at Cal Poly, between two lectures on Tuesday and Thursday, I would tell all the students, hey, until you arrive at lecture next on Thursday next time, you're not allowed to go in the front door of any building that doesn't have a ramp, because we put wheelchair ramps to the side doors and to the back doors, and
mm-hmm.
oftentimes
right.
we don't allow people in the front door.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I said, I challenged them, basically,
you
are not allowed. If I see you going in the front door, we're going to have a conversation. You're in
yeah.
trouble. You know, you need to go in the side door and just take it. And
right.
and then ask them how didn't it make you feel
right
that you that you're not valued enough that we would
that
let you in the front
come
door
come in the front door
right,
go
right.
in the back
yeah
right.
Because that's not right that's
right.
that's
yeah.
that you know that's not full inclusion
right
and we ought to be able to have everybody go in the front door if it's an important building that people need to get in
and that speaks to just real quick that
yeah.
speaks to the idea again the attitude and the awareness of. You know, and Paul Wolf said this one time I really liked. He said, you know, when the environment's not designed with the needs of people with disabilities in mind, for example, wheelchair users, that's like saying, I didn't think of you. You weren't in my thought process when I built this.
Absolutely.
That's an attitude right there.
Yeah.
And it's manifested in a design environment. But when we start to think of that from the start, like Kevin said, then that's where the idea of universal and inclusive design comes in. Then you build a ramped entrance that's integrated with the front door. And we've got a building or two like that at Cal yep. Poly where the ramp blends in. It's part of the aesthetic of the building.
Right.
And it's a lot less expensive to do it that way. It looks better, and everybody is brought along. There's not separate entrances. You know, it's not the segregated kind of approach. It's not an after-the-fact add-on that's often an eyesore. It's, hey, you know, we did it from the start. When you change attitudes, then everybody starts to take that approach, and it's better overall for everyone.
And if the ramp's ugly, it's not the ramp's fault. It's not the fault of people with disability. It's an incompetent architect that designed a ramp that was ugly.
Yeah.
You know, there's a beautiful old building, Building 2 at Cal Poly's campus, and it was a challenge to put a ramp to go in the front door. But, friend of ours, a longtime resident of the Central Coast, Michael Shannon, who got his master's degree in architecture at Cal Poly, designed a beautiful ramp. And from 100 feet away, looking at the building, you can't even see it. It blends into the steps that frame the front of this beautiful old building. But it's a great ramp, perfectly functional. And a lot of people go to Cal Poly for 4 years and never really realize that there's a wheelchair ramp leading up to the front doors at Building 2. But everyone that uses a wheelchair, is grateful for it and knows it.
Yeah.
And,
There's a lot of controversy, and there has been, for accessibility, especially for retrofitting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for businesses that feel like it's putting undue burden on them as business owners, and what do you say to that?
Well, there are situations where it is an undue burden. There are situations where it's a historical landmark, and changing it would fundamentally alter the structure of the landmark, and it would get in the way of other people's enjoyment of it or the providing of whatever services they do. So, you know, it's not a hard and fast rule that every building has to be retrofitted with accessibility. Sometimes it's just not realistic, and it's not feasible.
Do the laws account for that?
The laws do account for that, and that's that idea of the undue burden. Proof of that is certainly critical and can get tricky, but there's guidance on that. The Department of Justice and ADA hotlines that can help people know, what am I responsible for doing for that? And if you can provide an alternative way of that person getting that product or service that is not limiting them or providing less access, then you can do that. For example, if it's a restaurant, if you can provide curbside service because there's just no other way to get them in the restaurant, be willing to do that if someone requests that.
Interesting.
And that's, again, that's a workaround.
Yeah.
Because sometimes
it's
just not possible.
Right.
Not with today's technology, at least. So.
Right.
Yeah, and oftentimes it's not as expensive. If you're creative, if you explore those alternative solutions, it's it's not as expensive as some people first think.
Yeah, don't assume that. Yeah.
But fundamentally it comes down to the attitudinal approach as well. In the introduction I talked about this categorical social perspective and how we need to move to a social minority perspective. And there are sociologists and theorists in disability studies theory, some of them rabble-rousers from England, who
can't imagine that.
Figures.
And they're not soccer players.
They talk about an ecological perspective, and where the ecological perspective really comes at it from, the disability doesn't belong to the human being. The disability belongs to the environment.
Yeah.
And I struggled to explain this for some years to my students, and one of them said, to me, said it beautifully, said back to me, she said, so what you mean is, if someone can't get through the door, it's not their fault, it's the door's fault. and I'm like, well, that's pretty much exactly what it is. In a nutshell, if someone can't get in the building, it's the building's fault.
Yeah.
And the building was designed by an architect. And if it was designed long ago in a different time with a different perspective, then yes. Where we can, we honor that building, a beautiful old building, and try and maintain it. But we need to be committed to finding creative solutions to get people in the front door.
Rather than finding ways to make it too expensive.
Exactly.
We're going to take a real quick. Susan, I've been hanging on the line here.
Yeah.
Hi. Did you have a comment?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to say we moved here in 2006 from Sacramento, and the California for Disability Rights has been around since 1970, And they're the ones that got all the curb cut laws and the bathroom laws and all those laws passed and the codes put into, all those laws put into code for the building.
Uh-huh.
And we are still in Sacramento trying to make sure those laws stay in place and regulations. And we still get assaults by various people who think, oh, we don't need that anymore, or business people don't want to be bothered with it, or architects who don't want to do the design work that is so easy to do. And so we have to keep a vigilance on this assault on our rights for access. So we can't be complacent. But we have a local group. I have a lot of names of people I've met, and we're planning to have a meeting on the 27th of July at the Rancho de los Animales in Arroyo Grande. And it's a Sunday, it'll be in the afternoon, and if they're interested, they can call me.
What's your phone number, Susan?
It's 805-528.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
4695, and they just leave a message for me.
Okay.
And I can give them the details, or they can email me. And my email is barnon, hill, at gmail.com.
Okay, Susan, we're running short on time here.
Thank you for having this program. It's been very useful. I know these guys, and it's a good group. They do a lot of good things, and it's fun to be with them.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Susan.
And we're about 4 minutes away from the end of the show, so I wanted to go back to healthcare.
Sure. I'll just briefly say I'm, along with these two other gentlemen, a member of Access for All, and I chair a subcommittee called Healthcare Accessibility. We've got other members, Brian and Beverly Ging, Janice Fong-Wolf, Paul Wolf, mm-hmm. Kathy Hanula, and basically we're trying to work with community healthcare providers, particularly hospitals and clinics, on just making sure that we're meeting the needs of people with disabilities as far as access to health care.
Physical access.
Physical, communication, attitudinal.
Right.
Those are kind of three of the big barriers.
Right.
But as it applies to people with mobility, visual, right. hearing, cognitive, speech disabilities. So our objective is not really to go out and pick out who's not doing what and accuse them and do that. I mean, it's a collaborative effort. We're wanting to... we're doing this of our own accord, free kind of consultation. But the big thing is raising awareness and through training. So we've worked with Twin Cities Hospital. They mm-hmm. invited us to come speak to some of their medical staff. And we show a 25-minute video and then provide some personal accounts of experiences with barriers in healthcare. And it just is a way to make sure that, you know, it's not just the physical architectural changes that need to
right.
be done, but it's often, you know, making sure people understand disability, how to interact with people with disabilities, with different disabilities, and, you know, understand some of the attitudinal barriers that kind of get in the way where it's, you know, maybe not respecting the person's own understanding of their disability or their own independence and what
right.
they're able to do. Just as a quick point, you know, unfortunately, I think there's sometimes this idea that people with disabilities are not active, that they're not independent, that they have a low quality of life. And as we've tried to impress on the audiences, it's very much not the case.
Yeah.
And as long as it's not – disability should not be focused on as something like the medical model of strictly being fixed. There's a place for the medical model. I'm an occupational therapist myself and come from a family of healthcare providers. I value that. But – it's the social model that I think we need to bring more into our healthcare system and make sure all staff, professional and non-professional, understand that, you know, people with disabilities, their health is not necessarily their own preoccupation. But if we don't make things like weighing scales accessible or exam tables or provide sign language interpreters or,
right.
You know, provide direction, verbal direction to people who are blind, then they're getting a less experience in healthcare.
Well, so. Thank you for that. And, you know, that could be a whole show in itself,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to thank my guests today, Dr. Kevin Taylor, Mark Schaefer, and John Lee, for joining me. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX. Your suggestions for future show topics are welcome. Please send them to voices@kcbx.org. Next week on Central Coast Voices, please join Fred Monroe as your host. I want to thank my guests, and I'm Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for listening to Central Coast Voices.